Hare Krishna. So it is a great pleasure and very purifying, of course, to again speak about Srila Prabhupada, his glories, his qualities. It wasn't easy. What Srila Prabhupada did wasn't easy. Although he made it look easy. In retrospect, it may seem fairly easy. Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he chanted Hare Krishna, and people came. But there was a lot more. Srila Prabhupada came to establish the truth, which is difficult in a world of untruth. This is not only a world of untruth. If it was simply a matter of ignorance, then you'd simply have to state the truth, and this problem would be solved. But not only is this a world of ignorance, but it's a world where everyone is committed to ignorance as being reality, and they don't want the truth. Srila Prabhupada would pronounce the word ignorance as ignorance. You catch that? It means to deliver. It's ignorance means to ignore Krishna. That's the point. So Srila Prabhupada had to struggle in so many ways. It's well known. But he just wanted to go on presenting the truth, and ultimately the truth is Krishna. Srila Prabhupada often spoke against the cheating of the scientists, the cheating of the financial system, the cheating of so-called education. He wondered, because we and everyone in this world is enamored of these things, and we think, oh, this is very good. Science has given us so many contributions. In some ways you can say that's true. For instance, I'm speaking into this microphone, which is something which has been developed by science and technology. But the reason that we think it is of value, or we may admit that it's of some value, is a different reason to that which everyone else in the world considers it to be of value. We consider it to be of value because it facilitates discussion of topics of Krishna. And materialists think that it's valuable because it facilitates everything and anything except topics of Krishna. They think it's good because it amplifies the sound of various kinds of non-devotional music and all kinds of talks and this and that. So the idea that science has benefited the world is based on the supposition that life is meant for enjoying this world. So it's the whole idea, the core ideology behind it. There's a problem with that. And there are other problems. Another major problem is that it diverts our attention away from the real purpose of life. For instance, we can do all kinds of research on how to grow different kinds of grass and feed it to cows so you get more milk. But anyway, if we just feed the cows without doing so much research, they'll give milk. And Krishna, depend on Krishna, you don't have to waste so much time, years and years, studying in university and this and that, and save the time for chanting Hare Krishna. It's unnecessarily. We don't really have to understand how the grass is turned into milk. Just it's Krishna's mercy, that's all. And trying to find better ways of doing it, and their better ways usually result in cow slaughter, because the cow is seen as an economic module. So this is just one example. Another factor that many people in the Western world are very much aware of, not very much in India or China or these places, is the actual harm that science or scientific developments have caused and are causing to the world in the forms of various kinds of pollution, including mental pollution, all kinds of things that we don't really even know What bad effects are there? So Srila Prabhupada, that's just one example. He stood at that time. Actually, there weren't the things that Srila Prabhupada, many of the things that Srila Prabhupada stood against or expressed skepticism in, others weren't doing. Now it's become quite fashionable or well known to criticize the fiat money system in which money is produced, abracadabra, out of nothing. And it's not based on gold or silver or anything of value. Now it's become quite well known that this is a whole cheating system. But Srila Prabhupada he noted that well ahead of, and there may have been some, but also the cheating of the scientists. At that time, there was general faith that science is something very good. That's changed a lot. There was general faith in politicians. People thought that politicians, they have the interest of the people and the country. But Srila Prabhupada, he said, he pointed out the politicians are all cheating, and even the idea of nationalism, that's something which hasn't come around in popular consciousness. The whole concept of nationalism is simply dog-like consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada put it very graphically. So Srila Prabhupada, he came to establish the truth. Tattva darshan means philosophical delineation. Well, and we can just say philosophy, tattva darshan, the English word philosophy, which doesn't really, like many English words, it doesn't really convey the sense of philosophy as in the term tattva darshan or tattva gyan. Tattva darshi, the word is there in Bhagavad Gita. We should approach a tattva darshi, one who sees reality in all its categories, one who's seen the truth in one word, one who has seen the truth. So Srila Prabhupada saw the truth of that this material world is nonsense. And he pointed that out in the manner of Chandra Shaka Nyai, which is everything, even the manner of Srila Prabhupada's teaching, we also learn from him. It's nothing new, it's the ancient Vedic system of teaching. And that's another thing that was revolutionary about Srila Prabhupada. Instead of saying, I'm bringing something new, in the Western world, you have, oh, new kind of art style, new kind of music, new kind of fashion, new discovery, invention. Srila Prabhupada said, no, it's all nonsense. Whatever is true is true, and it doesn't change. So if it's old and it doesn't change, it's better. He stated that his authority derives from the fact, what he says is true, because it derives from the fact that it's based on that which has been accepted as true since time immemorial and is true, and always will be true, not that I've invented something new. So a completely different approach. And then what was I going to say, because I sidetracked into something else. What was I speaking about? You also? Nationalism, yeah, nationalism. So Srila Prabhupada also pointed this out. It's actually a new phenomenon. There was no such thing as nationalism until recent times. Or nation states is a fairly recent phenomenon. So Srila Prabhupada, he came to give reality. Ah, yes, I was saying Chandra Shaka Nyai. That's where I left off, yeah. So Chandra Shaka Nyai, it's a child wants to know, he's heard the word, what the moon. What is the moon? So the mother points out, you see the tree there, two branches, that round thing there? That's the moon. So you point out something close that's known. And then you point out to something that's not well known. So it's a matter of teaching in phases. So Srila Prabhupada, he's pointing out that all the defects of material existence, of modern society, did so not that simply to understand the defects of this material world is perfection in itself, but to point us to the actual reality, to convince us that this world is not real. There's one very, one very interesting statement, but of course, everything Srila Prabhupada said was very interesting. One thing he said about Time magazine, maybe you're familiar with that. I don't know if it's very, it used to be quite popular among devotees. I don't know if it is any, still. I don't think so. Now there's the internet, yeah. So it's news and news analysis. Very intelligent people in a material way, analyzing all the news and what's going on in the world and different trends and this and that. And Srila Prabhupada, he was shown this by one devotee, and Srila Prabhupada said, you shouldn't read this, because if you read this kind of thing, it makes the material world seem real. I remember, actually, because one of my strange services, when we were first in Bangladesh, in Dhaka, in the capital, we had a Muslim landlord who wasn't really a Muslim at all. He wanted foreigners as tenants. He lived just opposite us, so that we could bring him whiskey, because in Bangladesh, only foreigners are allowed to buy whiskey. So, such nice music makes the material world seem nice. So he used to get Time magazine, he wanted me to read it, and I had to go and socialize with him and then discuss things. And that was one of the less, so many things we had to do. I won't tell you all the things we had to do just to get a little toehold there in that country. So I think it came out every week. And I used to read it, and then all of a sudden I found in myself that I'm thinking, oh, America's so wonderful. I said, what's going on here? It must be that Time magazine. It doesn't write America is wonderful, but it's the underlying pulse of everything. America is wonderful. As in Srila Prabhupada's books, the underlying pulse is that Krishna is wonderful. Surrender to Krishna. Every line, every word, even the space between the letters. Srila Prabhupada is pushing, surrender to Krishna, you rascal. So it wasn't easy. It was never easy. Sometimes we think that, well, we should try to make everything easy for everyone so they can come to Krishna consciousness. And there's some merit in that, but at the same time we have to understand that for people to take the truth as it is, even people who are pious, they're not often inclined to take to Krishna consciousness, surrender to Krishna. Just like yesterday we saw so many pious people came. Their culture is, Krishna is in their culture. But most of them are not very inclined to surrender to Krishna, give their life to Krishna. And even those of us who have come to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, is constant preaching is required, that we have to go forward, advance, give up material attachments, don't remain in Maya, take Krishna consciousness seriously. So it's a lot of work. As Srila Prabhupada, he used to quote his own spiritual master as saying that to make one devotee takes gallons of blood. It's not such an easy thing. Srila Prabhupada, he went to America and he taught Bhagavad Gita. We're not the body. We're eternal servants of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Bhagavad Gita is, of course, presented in the context of Krishna enticing Arjuna to fight. If we take the the main narrative, we can say, in the storyline is that Arjuna didn't want to fight and Krishna convinced him to do so. And Srila Prabhupada, he would speak on Bhagavad Gita and saying that Arjuna wanted to be non-violent and Krishna chastised him for his nonsensical attitude. This was during the time of the Vietnam War, and almost all of the persons coming to hear Srila Prabhupada were hippies who were absolutely convinced that the Vietnam War is something very wrong and any good person would oppose that. And Srila Prabhupada, you can see it's right in his lectures. He said, you voted the government, and if the government sends you to fight, you have to follow. It was completely against the hippie ideas of peace and love and justice. But Srila Prabhupada wouldn't flinch from that. It's not even it's the setting that Krishna is convincing Arjuna to fight. It's the setting in which Krishna explains the higher values. It's not that Krishna is exhorting everyone in every circumstance to fight. The message for everyone which Krishna delivers through Arjuna is that we should surrender to Krishna. Understand, this material world is miserable. We don't belong here. But Srila Prabhupada, even when he came to understand that it wasn't a very popular example, he could have just spoken the Bhagavad Gita, leaving the philosophy, leaving out that context. He didn't have to go on saying that, well, Krishna is in, he's exhorting Arjuna to fight, but he went on with that. He didn't withdraw from that. In fact, it seems he almost took that as a challenge to defeat that wrong idea of absolute non-violence, the peace and love, the idea of the hippies, which is another materialistic idea. Generally, people think, well, if someone talks about peace and love, they're very good. But they're not very good if they're not devotees of Krishna. And if they're devotees of Krishna, they don't talk about peace and love very much. They talk about surrendering to Krishna, from which actual peace and love can come. But the idea of peace and love without surrendering to Krishna, it's just another materialistic idea. We shall be happy in this material world without Krishna. So it's actually a demoniac idea. And also we find that so many people, they talk of peace, but they themselves, they'll talk about peace and then go and eat pieces of meat. It's a very common thing. Even the Dalai Lama, people think, oh, what a great saint. What a great saintly person. He's a great meat eater. He's not saintly, no. He's a hypocrite. That's exactly the right word. I know, yeah. Tell us. I heard about it. You can tell us. We'll have an interactive session here. He was very heavy letter. Yeah.
Yeah, my doctor said it's healthy. Healthy, it's good for me, health.
Yeah.
McCartney wrote that. No, the doctor's wrong.
McCartney was openly against him because bad for health. I saw something about that. He said he became a vegetarian and he ate lots of nuts and he got a liver problem, so his doctors told him to eat meat. Well, he got the wrong diet. You don't eat lots of nuts. They're very difficult to digest. But actually, even it might be that eating meat is not such a bad thing for health. It might be. The way people eat it nowadays, meat packed with hormones and frozen and lots of red meat. Previously, meat eaters used to eat it occasionally.
Packed with carbs.
I'm just getting around to that, yeah. I'm saying for physical health, you see, plenty of people live to 90 or more who are meat eaters. But that's not our point. The point is that it's packed with karma as well as hormones. And patrang pushpang palang toya, Krishna doesn't like it. That is our reason for being vegetarian, not actually for health. And also, it's a horrible thing to slaughter animals just to relish the taste of blood. Ugh. So, yeah, Srila Prabhupada, and he stood against this, the idea of utopian happiness in this material world, peace conferences. He was once called to a peace conference by this Yogi Bhajan, who was actually very appreciative of Srila Prabhupada and his followers in many ways. Yogi Bhajan said, well, we just want to call everyone and bring everyone together. And Prabhupada said, you'll never bring them all together. It's not possible. You make them all Krishna conscious, then they can all come together. You have to understand what is the center. So Srila Prabhupada, he went against the grain. He was very provocative in many ways. There's one description of, it must have been 1966, 1967 in New York and the Lower East Side. And Srila Prabhupada, he would speak among the hippies against what they called free sex. And one night, some local celebrities came. There were a rock band called the Fugs. The Fugs. Yeah, almost. And they made one of their big hit was, it's mentioned in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. I actually never heard of them till I read about it in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. Their big hit was called Slum Goddess of the Lower East Side. And they were promoting gross illicit sex. And that evening when they came, it was a big thing. Oh this big great personality. They're sitting in front of Prabhupada and they're thinking these rock stars are some big personalities. And Prabhupada, on that evening, it's not clear whether he was told that these are big rock stars or whatever. Prabhupada spoke very heavily against the idea of being happy via sex. They never came again. But Prabhupada didn't compromise. Umapati, Das at the time, he narrated several times. He told me more than once, and he wrote it several times, that he said to Prabhupada, they were going back 1966, 1967, he's one of the first first 10 initiates. And he said that, well, Swamiji, at that time they called Prabhupada Swamiji, don't you think that it'll be difficult for the Americans to accept all this? Prabhupada said, I'm not speaking to please the Americans. I'm speaking to establish the actual truth. And the two things are very different, speaking what people want to hear and what they need to hear. There is, at the present time in our society, the idea you give them little bit by little bit by little bit, but we never seem to come to the whole bit. I've discussed that in some detail in one of my recent books on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service, that we can, that it's not wrong to give people bit by bit by bit, but we have to quite soon, if we are to adopt such a process, we have to quite soon give them the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Otherwise, what happens, we become accustomed to avoiding the truth. And people, even among ourselves, we seem to think there's something wrong in stating, distinguishing reality from illusion for the welfare of all. So, there are so many examples. Vietnam War, illicit sex. Oh yeah, Prabhupada said the United Nations, a pack of... He likened them to a pack of barking dogs. He said, if you get a group of dogs and put them in a room, will they be peaceful? No, because they are not peaceful by nature. So he said, the United Nations, they're all low-class people. They have no regulated principles. So it's like a pack of dogs. He said, there'll never be peace. Oh, and with same thing, he said to Yogi Bhajan, when Srila Prabhupada was preaching, that was the height of the civil rights movement and feminism, burning the bras and all this kind of thing. And Srila Prabhupada, he said, it's spiritually equal, but materially there's a difference. Not an easy thing. It's more difficult in the present time to say things like this. There's this idea that if you try to say that any person is better than anyone else, there's very wrong. Or if any gender is better than another, or any religion is better than another, everything's all the same. One kind of Mayavad, everything's all the same. But although spiritually we're all equal, bodily there are differences. It's not that, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaivashva Pakecha Pandita Samadarshanaha. A learned person sees a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, a dog eater, an elephant, all, he sees them with the same vision. That doesn't mean he treats them all the same. It's not that you treat a Brahmana and a tiger the same. Bow down at the lotus feet of the tiger, and just as you're bowing down, you lose your head. It goes in the tiger's mouth. So very pragmatic also. Gave the Veda. And Srila Prabhupada, he commented about this. He said that this, who is that? Yogi Mahesh, something like that. Maharishi, they used to call him. So Prabhupada said, yeah, if I could also cheat people like that, but yeah, I give regulative principles. Because he gave regulative principles. The hippie era, the hippies was just do your own thing, no rules, live free. And Prabhupada said, no illicit sex, no disciplined life, rise early in the morning. It's just the exact opposite of what people wanted to hear, but Srila Prabhupada gave them what they needed. And of course, he also, in the beginning, introduced it step by step. In fact, his first disciples in America, he told them their initiate to take initiation, and then afterwards they asked, well, what does it mean to be initiated? And Prabhupada said, you have to accept the Guru as good as God, and he gave a list. All initiated devotees must rise early in the morning, attend all programs, not eat food cooked by non-devotees. He gave a whole list. He didn't tell them before they were initiated. It was only after they were initiated, because they were coming along slowly, and Prabhupada just kick-started them into. But he didn't even introduce shaving heads or dress codes. Gradually he introduced. Sometimes devotees today say, well, in the beginning Prabhupada didn't introduce this, so it isn't important. Well, it is important, but it was gradually that Srila Prabhupada introduced all these things. Shaving the head, nowadays it's become, shaving the head for men, it's become quite normal. And see, we see many of our devotees shave off their shikas also, which is not very auspicious. But at that time, it looked very odd. It was considered very odd, and especially for the hippies. Men, they were so attached to their long hair. That was the sign, that was the main sign of being a hippie, was to have long hair. And Srila Prabhupada had it shaved off. Not just even short, which is socially acceptable, but shaved. One time, in a conversation, Srila Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya has come to save you. But Srila Prabhupada spoke with Bengali inflection, so it sounded something like, shave you. And devotees weren't sure whether he was said to save you or shave you. And Prabhupada, he understood this, yes, he's come to save you and shave you. So Prabhupada, he was very concerned to give Krishna and not to cheat others, not not there to be any semblance of cheating. Make everything very clear. But it seemed to many to be harsh. A very popular book at that time was called I'm Okay, You're Okay, which means live and let live. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be, said. See, you're laughing. The others aren't laughing. They don't know. You see, the Beatles are being forgotten now. Gradually, there was such a big thing. The words of the sung to such a tune that it sounds like profound wisdom. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. What is this, let it be? Let it be. I'm hungry. Let it be. Don't eat. I'm still hungry. 2 days, I didn't eat anything. Let it be. Let it be. Don't do anything. They just let everything be as it is. It's such a nonsense idea. And Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, sharira yatra pichate na prasiddhyeda karmanaha. Even to maintain the body, one has to do something. So the idea, just let it be, it's meaningless, completely meaningless. But it sounds profound to people who's, are just stupid, that's all. Fools, rascals, Srila Prabhupada commonly used these words. Nowadays we have the idealized Prabhupada, the nice old grandfather who used to smile at everyone. But he did smile also. But Prabhupada is very strong. He himself said that when I first came, I thought when I said to the Americans that now you stop eating meat, eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, they would say to me, Swamiji, you please go back home. But he said it anyway. And people took it. Gradually people took it. And they realized that, yes, this is correct. He's the first person who's actually spoken to us what's real. Those who know do not speak, and those who speak do not know. That's the Zen saying. But those who know do speak. They tell people. But the problem is that most of the people who are speaking don't know, but they think they know. So reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. Srila Prabhupada brought the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada said, when I had the first three volumes, the first canto of Bhagavatam published, then I thought, now I'm ready to go to the West. And he said that all the philosophy, everything that he wanted to present is in that first canto. And we'll find that in the first canto is not only in Srila Prabhupada's purports, are not only the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but a whole blueprint for Krishna conscious civilization, how the king should be, education system, marriage system, how government should be organized, everything in seed form, everything is given there. And there's a lot more to develop, actually, if we are to establish. I was just looking at the Vyasa Puja book that was published just now, and it's heartening to see that at last, at least, some of our leaders are beginning to talk about Varnashram. But if we're going to establish Varnashram Dharma, it will require much research, because we don't have a model of that at the present time. We haven't seen it working. And there are many questions. I myself am involved in establishing some what are called Varnashram communities in India, but the start is there, living on the land, simply growing our own food, chanting Hare Krishna, gurukuls, no electricity, I said that already, and so it's a start. It's not easy, but there's some stuff, but there are so many things, there's so many questions arise. Living on the land and growing the food, that's relatively easy, and to convince people to do it is not so easy, but actually, in the West, if we had these communities, as Prabhupada wanted, then, as Prabhupada said, people would join us in their millions. It would be a great preaching in the West. What to do with all the refugees? Well, they can come. They'd come, yeah, and give them place. And in America, there's so many beggars on the streets, much more than in England. So Srila Prabhupada said, we can't expect everyone to be fully Krishna conscious, but the Varnashram is to engage everyone at some level. So it's a great mission that Srila Prabhupada gave. And he gave it in seed form, and we have a great task to establish that. And that in itself will be great preaching to show that Krishna consciousness is not just some theory or some Hindu cult, but it's a practical way of life that everyone can take to at some level. Of course, in our Varnashram communities, not everyone is expected to be fully Krishna conscious, but they're not going to eat meat, they're not going to drink wine. There may be some allowance even for that, but not in the beginning. At least in the beginning we have to have dedicated devotees. Srila Prabhupada also described, in Vedic culture, meat-eating is not fully banned. He said, in fact, there was some discussion with Dr. Patel on the beach in Bombay, and Dr. Patel was talking about Swami Narayan and how he was against meat-eating, and Prabhupada said, well, that's allowed in Vedic culture. And then Dr. Patel said, then I reject the Vedas. And Prabhupada got, then he said, you're like Buddha. But it's allowed by offering not cows, but some other animal or bird to Kali once a month. And it's also allowed, Prabhupada said, if you want to eat cow's meat, we will give beef to you. Yes. Wait till the animal dies, you take the animal. That's allowed. That's for the chandalas, not for cultured people. But that's allowed. And in fact, they're not only allowed to take, but they eat the meat, they take the skins, and from the skins, the leather, they tan the leather, and that may be used for making leather shoes, which are not banned in Vedic culture. In fact, in Shastra, it's specifically stated about leather shoes. And mridangas, yeah. And many uses, actually. So, that's practical. Srila Prabhupada he spoke continually on Krishna conscious philosophy, establishing Varnashram communities. It's not easy even to get on the boat. It wasn't easy. Prabhupada, to get permission to leave India from the government, to get a sponsor in America so he could get a visa, to get Sumati Morarji to sponsor, even though she knew him and respected him as a sadhu, but she probably knew so many sadhus and respected them. She's a pious lady. But she didn't want to give Prabhupada a ticket. He did a dharna. That's, what do you call that in English? Sit-in strike or something. Outside her office. He wouldn't leave until she agreed to give him a ticket. To go to, you don't know Hindi, huh? You know Hindi? No. So until she agreed to give him a ticket on a freight ship, it wasn't a passenger ship with all facilities. There's one, and he went. He had heart attacks. His godbrothers were opposed to him. His first manuscript of Bhagavad Gita was stolen from him. So many things. But he said, I never complain. I just go on. It's not easy. So remembering that, we should be careful about accepting the easy path. Because that is the tendency of most people in the material world. The great people, so-called great people of the material world, they are the ones who don't accept the easy path. they, just like some inventor, who is it, Edison, he made 10,000 experiments before he was able to, he had an idea about making an electric light, but he wasn't sure how to go about it, so he went through 10,000 different experiments before, he knew that it's something, it's possible, but he wasn't sure how to do it. At least that's what we're told. When you buy notebooks in India, they have all these little anecdotes, things like this. So he went through 10,000 different experiments and eventually made an electric light. Wasn't easy. Great military leaders, Napoleon, it wasn't easy. He had the boldness, the guts to almost literally take France by the shirt collar and put it into shape. And then he began his military campaigns. So it's not easy. Many people think, I'd like to be famous, but it's not easy. I'd like to be the prime minister. It's not easy, even though you may criticize him in so many ways. So most people look for the easy life, the path of least resistance. There's a word being coined, sheeple. The people are called sheeple because they're like sheep. They just follow. The whole advertising industry is based on the fact that people will agree to whatever stupid propaganda you give them. At least a significant percentage of the population are susceptible to advertising, which means they're stupid. But they prefer to be, because thinking is too difficult. Making decisions yourself is too difficult. They prefer to be cheated. So the sheeple. But there are others who stand out. Even this Bin Laden, I'm not saying that he's great in a good way, but he decided to do something which went against the whole idea of just living peacefully. And he invited the wrath of the great American military-industrial complex, which eventually got him. But he stood out. So Srila Prabhupada also, in preaching, any you take, Jesus, his life wasn't easy. Buddha, he deliberately, he left the comfortable life of a prince to find the truth as he perceived it. So Srila Prabhupada, there's one quote of his. I put so many quotes in this book, on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. He said, don't think that preaching is easy. Preaching means fighting. So, we have a lot of work to do. It's very exciting, actually, what Srila Prabhupada has given us, the challenge to change the whole society. We have, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, what he has given us. He's given us blueprints for changing the whole society. He's given us the knowledge we have, the philosophy we have. It works. It's great. It explains everything, as much as everything can be explained. Getting that across to the people, communicating that. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the lifestyle of Krishna consciousness, it's a great challenge. Probably the greatest challenge that the Western world is facing at the present time is the challenge of Islamism, not Islamic, that's not the right word, is Islamistic extremism and the overflow of that in the term of the immediate problem of refugees. Well, what's the Krishna conscious answer to that? Did we think about it? We should be involved in such matters. We should be giving answers. Prabhupada, he spoke on all on relevant issues, not that we're just boxed up in our own little world and discussing in our own tone, arguing, does the soul fall from the spiritual world, or where we hear all the time. In the meantime, people are going to hell, and we're so much concerned over things which, yeah, well, that's all. Philosophical issues are also important, but we should see that we have priorities also. Srila Prabhupada, we see, was so active with the mission of fulfilling the order of his spiritual master that people are suffering. We have to do something to help them.
Liberalism
Liberalism is a big concern. Well, yeah, liberalism is a bigger concern, but I'm saying in terms of what's perceived as the problem. It's not widely perceived that liberalism is a problem. It's widely perceived that non-liberalism is a problem. That's also part of that. Yeah, it's liberalism, which actually underlying it all is Mayavad. Srila Prabhupada penned his own pranam mantra, nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya desha tarne. So our fight is philosophical. We also have to establish communities of devotees living together peacefully, which for us should be our big issue. How we can live peacefully and cooperatively with Krishna in the center. And not peacefully, just simply on, I'm okay, you're okay, let's all smile together. Not in this new age, wishy-washy, sentimental, but actually real unity can be seen when two or more people can vigorously disagree with each other and still go on. As sometimes Bhima would criticize Yudhishthira like anything, but they would go on, because their unity was so deep that it wouldn't be there was no question. Even though Bhima would criticize Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira would give him a proper reply also, but there was no question of Bhima actually rebelling against or rejecting, because their unity, their internal unity was so strong. So that kind of unity is very strong. Not this kind of unity where we just pretend we love everyone and we smile at them, but actually we don't like them at all. That is very much part of the British psyche, especially, I think, in South England, where I was raised, and I hated it as a kid, that where people just smile at each other, but actually they hate each other, but they make a show of being nice to each other. So much. As Srila Prabhupada said, that the real, speaking about Vyasa Puja, he in one of the Vyasa Puja offerings that he wrote to his own guru, he said the real worship of the guru is not by a ceremony of fruits and flowers, which of course should be there, not that we stop doing this ceremony, but the real worship is in fulfilling his order. So that's a big thing, isn't it? Not a small thing. A very great task. So see what you can do. Manchester is also an important city. Probably the second most important city in England, isn't it? What do you think? It's either Manchester or Birmingham. The West Midlands is second largest, but it's not a cultural centre like Manchester is. The universities are important. It's better known, much better known than Birmingham, probably due to Manchester United more than anything. I was writing emails. I have my emails typed by devotees because I don't like to strain my wrist. And I was giving the names of these cities, Nottingham, and they said, how do you know? How do you know how to spell it? Yeah, they've heard of Nottingham, someone living. Why? because of some football team. England's great cultural contribution to the world. So Manchester Educational Centre and Cultural Inter... here's something, I've already said this twice in the last few days in lectures, I'll say it again. I was on a flight, what was that, London to Belfast, and someone just sitting close to me had this Kindle, and they were reading The Times, the great newspaper of England. Sorry for the Manchester Guardian, but The Times is probably more important. And then he's flipping through, and then he came to one page, and it said culture, which means it's the culture page. They're talking about art and painting and music. And the picture, which they gave a photo to show that it's the culture page, was of some woman, maybe in her early 20s, with this crazed look on her face, her hair spread everywhere, bent over, holding a guitar. And that's culture. That's not culture, but that's what they think is culture. So Manchester is also a cultural center in terms of that kind of culture and fashion and all this kind of thing. And it's also just well situated in as much as there's huge population all around. There's Liverpool and then just in the rest of Lancashire, so many towns, and then just east there's Yorkshire. West Yorkshire, I don't know what they call it now, West Riding it used to be. It was Leeds, Sheffield, Bradford, all big cities. So it's a good place to preach from. So you have a lot of work to do. Harinam Sankirtan, great preaching, always. It's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's process. Distributing books. We've got great books, they're really good books. All kinds of things can be done. Of course, most of you are tied up most of the time in family maintenance. But anyway, see what you can do. Spread this movement. That will be the best worship of Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada! Having said that, I myself, I'm not going out these days much on Harinam and Bhagavad. I'm sitting and writing a lot of the time. But the books also have their message. Important books. That's Prabhupada's order to me. I do travel around and meet people. Establishing communities, it's also very important. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any question? Maybe it's getting a bit late, some of you have to go. Anyway, if there are one or two questions, yeah.
We hear two ideas. One idea is that we should leave people with a good impression.
And we should leave people with a good impression. The idea that we should leave people with a good impression is not the beginning and end of preaching. Yes, we should give people a good impression, but more important, as we have heard, as we hear from Shastra and from Srila Prabhupada, is to give people the message of Krishna. Jare Deko Tare, give a good impression. We don't find that. To give them the message of Krishna. They may or may not like it. We shouldn't unnecessarily give people a bad impression, but it may be that just by in giving the message, that in itself will be a bad impression, because people don't like it. This point is, this and all similar related points is discussed in detail in this book that I've compiled called On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service. So if you really want the answer in detail, it's in there.
Truth hurts.
Truth hurts, but it can hurt, yeah. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, a sadhu is one who cuts like a butcher. And that's from Krishna's statement in Srimad Bhagavatam. Tato du sanga utsrija. Satsu sajjaita buddhiman santai vasya chindanti manovya sangam uktibihi. Krishna says that having understood this material world is useless, one should give up bad association, and being very intelligent, associate with sadhus. And sadhus are those who by their words cut, they slash to pieces, chindanti, they cut, they slash to pieces all our mental concoctions. So it can be painful, but it's also very liberating. It's like, have any of you ever had a boil or an abscess? Hurts like anything. And when it's cut, it hurts, especially if they don't use anesthetic, which I had that experience more than once. It's really very painful. But after it's over, still you feel some pain for some time, but then the relief. Or another example, like passing stool. It can be after constipation. It's... Ah, what a relief. So we have so much stool in our minds. Sometimes it may be required to be medically removed. It's lifetimes and lifetimes of piled up stool in our consciousness.
He had to go do some magistrates' service, right? Mm. So he asked his son back, he said, down there, can you give this? Because it was a class, about 1,000 people.
I think you're getting a little confused with the debate between Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. On the position of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was expected to be the main speaker, but he was bedridden by rheumatism, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati went. It was a major challenge.
And there was only, 1,000 or whatever, and it was only like, he spoke the truth, and so many stayed, and the others ones who couldn't handle the truth got off.
Hmm. Yeah. There's another in...
He also said, if you not speak truth from Shasha, you'll become an atheist.
Not exactly, but something like that. Not exactly. He said, if I desisted from speaking the truth for fear of upsetting people's sensibilities, then I would become an offender to the Shastra and to Bhagavan, and I would become an atheist. That's a closer paraphrase. There is an anecdote given in Saraswati Jai Shri, which is a biographical work on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which was written during his published during his presence, about his first sannyasi disciple Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj in Dhaka, which is the capital of East Bengal, now the capital of Bangladesh. This is all in all. This is in this book I compiled, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. So he went to a meeting, a religious meeting, with so many prominent people there, including so many prominent, respected Vaishnav leaders. Of course, from the Gauriamat perspective, they were cheaters. But in the first meeting, he simply spoke about the glories of the Vaishnavas, and everyone was very happy. Then another meeting, they all came again, and then he distinguished between real Vaishnavas and bogus Vaishnavas. That actually became then there was one booklet published, Achar O Acharya. Achar means proper behavior, O means end, and Acharya means Guru, one who teaches by example. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also in English wrote, Vaishnavism, Real and Apparent. So in the second meeting, Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj spoke about having established the glories of the Vaishnavas, he spoke about genuine and bogus Vaishnavas. And as he spoke, gradually people started leaving. At the end, there was one left, apart from him, apart from himself. That one, Subodh, I can't remember his second name. He became Sundarananda Vidya Vinod when he was initiated, and he became the most prominent literary manifestation of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's teachings. Many of the things that he taught, he didn't, after the early days of giving his commentaries on Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita, he didn't actually write very much Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He gave many magazine articles in the early days, but after that he would speak and his disciples would write mostly magazine articles based on what he spoke. So that one real devotee, of course his later history is something else, but he became a major mouthpiece of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's teachings. So if Pradeep Tirtha had simply just gone on praising the people, they would have liked it, but none of them would have surrendered to Krishna. Only one did. Only one did, ultimately. So Pradeep Tirtha chose the path of, not the easy path. He could see people were leaving. He went on speaking in the same way. He didn't stop. There's much about this in this Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, this how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati spoke about this. He also had many programs to attract the public. The Gauriya Mats, they would hold one public festival after another to attract people, very attractive festivals, theistic exhibitions. But then when people came, they would preach to them. In fact, they would have, in a major festival, they'd have not only kirtan going on, but they would have several experienced preachers in different places speaking to different groups of people. He emphasized so much the need to speak. It's quite common now, it seems, in Janmashtami festivals that our devotees organize. There's no lecture. There's kirtan and then some Bharatanatyam and some children dancing and some rock dancing and this, but no lecture. Why is that? Well, I guess they want people to be happy and bring more people. Don't say anything to disturb them. But you can have dramas are very good, kirtan. Actually, we don't need this rock and roll at all because kirtan itself is perfectly pure. Anyway, all these devotees with their guitars, there are millions of guitar players who are millions of times better than all of them. If you want rock music, you can get it 24 hours a day, 7 days, 24/7 on the internet. It's not that it's going to attract people if we play guitars and chant Hare Krishna. We have something unique. So this idea that we should try and make it popular, that's true, but not at the expense of compromising and watering it down.
Marsh lamps, Pink Floyd,
I don't know what that means. Marsh lamps?
Making a lot of noise.
I see, yeah.
Big speakers.
Big, I see, okay. Yes, Prabhupada would often quote this from Charnakya Pandit. Ekas chandrastamo hanti kingnatara sahasrasaha. One moon can illuminate the whole sky, not millions of stars. On the full moon night, you can almost read a book by moonlight. But on the Amavasya night, the new moon night, even though there are millions of stars, you can hardly see your finger in front of your face. Of course, you don't have that experience living in this neon jungle, but if we go to some place away, it has to be actually this neon lights, the refraction goes for many, many miles. So you have to get behind some mountains or somewhere a long way away, but then you can experience that. The moon. So one moon is better than millions of stars. So Srila Prabhupada said, if I had one pure devotee is enough to... We don't need many, many stars. Another... Actually, this is all discussed in this book, this on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. There's one anecdote. Achyutananda went with Srila Prabhupada before there was any development in Mayapur. They visited... He went with Srila Prabhupada to visit in Navadvip, the ashram, first of all, of Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, in which there are not many devotees, but they were very seriously practicing. And then they went to the Devananda Goryamat of Bhakti Pragan Keshav Maharaj, in which there were many, this is the way it's described in Prabhupada Lilamrita, there are many devotees, but... quite a few of the people living there, they were there because they got free board and lodging, and while they're studying, their village boys come to study in Navadvip, and there seem to be many there, but not so serious. This is the way that it's depicted. Exactly how it was, I don't know. But then after they got back to Mayapur, Achyutananda, he asked that, well, it seemed in one ashram they emphasized quality more, and in another ashram they emphasized quantity more. So what should be our approach, to emphasize quality or quantity? And Prabhupada said, both. Among Prabhupada's godbrothers, I saw one in Mayapur. He had his ashram, and he was... very, very learned, very, very austere, and very, very strict. He had one disciple. He was so strict. Anyone did anything wrong, he gave no room to anyone to do anything except just what it should be. And no one could live with him. Abhiram Thakur with his whip, yeah, but the if he bowed down to a stone that wasn't a shalagram would break. The children would die. And so on. Okay, Hare Krishna, all glories to his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada.